I'm Alana Casanova-Burgess, and for Melissa Harris-Perry, this is The Takeaway. We just heard about some of your favorite movie-going experiences of 2021. And if I can just briefly weigh in on one of my top picks for the year, I have to recommend The Green Knight. It's kind of a Christmas movie, even though it came out in the summer. It's moody and gorgeous, and Dev Patel is great in it. I was just turning the ending over and over in my brain for days afterwards. And here at The Takeaway, talking about our favorite 2021 movies means talking with the team's favorite movie critic duo. Rafer Guzman is a film critic for Newsday, and Kristen Meinzer is a culture critic and author of How to Be Fine. Kristen also told us about going back into public theaters for the first time.
I have to say, the first time I saw a movie in a theater after the pandemic, I almost cried because I was so grateful to be able to have that communal experience with other people, to emotionally be struck by the same things at the same times on the big screen. You know, for most of the past 2 years, it's just been me on the couch by myself, or me and my husband. So it really felt special to me the first time I actually stepped into a theater and got to experience that with others.
I think I saw Summer of Soul as the first movie in a theater. And I just found it to be so transporting. I mean, that documentary is great anyway. It's sort of like being in a concert, which also was an alien feeling that we did not get to have this year. But yeah, it was beautiful. I'd love to see it again just for like editing purposes. What did you think, Kristen?
Well, I saw it on the small screen, and the whole time I was watching it, I thought, I wish I was seeing this on a big screen because it just feels like a concert experience. The whole thing is essentially the Harlem Music Festival in 1969. I just thought, oh, I want to be there with Gladys Knight. I want to be there with Stevie Wonder. I want to be there in this crowd with all of these people feeling a sense of community and excitement.
Yes, exactly. And dancing
yes.
Especially. Yeah.
Yes.
So, Rafer, I see that Nightmare Alley was one of your favorite films of the year. That's a Guillermo del Toro movie. People might know his work from Pan's Labyrinth or The Shape of Water. What is Nightmare Alley? I don't know that I've actually heard of it.
Well, if you're an old movie fan, you might remember the old version with Tyrone Power. It's an old film noir set in a carnival. About half of it is set in a carnival. In this version, it's Bradley Cooper plays a guy named Stanton Carlisle. He's kind of a down and outer. It's post-depression, not quite yet World War II. Gets a job at this very seedy, disreputable carnival. And he finds out that he's pretty good at being a mentalist, you know, one of these mind reader types. Gets this older couple to show him the ropes and teach him this kind of dark art of reading people. And he kind of figures out that he's really good at it. Takes his act on the road, becomes a big success, hits the big city. He's got a helper, Rooney Mara, named Molly, who becomes his kind of showgirl assistant. Now they're in the big cities and they're playing all the best places. And then, of course, Stanton meets his match in Kate Blanchett, who plays Lilith Ritter. And what else is she? She's a psychiatrist. And so the two of these sort of mind readers get together and they get a kind of a racket going, seeing if they can bilk rich people for money.
You barely know me. Oh, I know you well. I know. You're no good. And I know that because neither am I.
That's the basic gist, based on a novel and sort of a remake of the old film noir.
And what did you like about it?
Well, I love Guillermo del Toro. I just think he's like one of the greatest filmmakers going. And I think, while I will say this is not exactly what you'd call a Christmas movie, it's not really, not really light entertainment, not what you'd call a feel-good film. It is such a great movie experience. You know, we were just talking about what it's like to be in a theater and see something on the big screen, and Del Toro is so great at that. You know, he really understands the subconscious and unconscious power of movies and how they work sort of like dreams and fantasies. And there's just all this great symbolism, the carnival rides, the scripts by Del Toro and Kim Morgan is great, all these sort of verbal foreshadowings. And it just unfolds like, I'm sorry, I can't think of a better word for it. It just unfolds like a nightmare. And your stomach is just filled with dread the entire time because you know that this is all going nowhere good. You're just not sure how. How is this all going to go so badly? And then, of course, it all does.
And Kristen, there's also Passing, written and directed by Rebecca Hall. I know it's been on a lot of best of lists because I've been personally meaning to watch it for several weeks. What should listeners know about the movie?
Passing tells the story of two African-American women with light complexions in the 1920s, and they've chosen very different paths in life. Irene is living in Harlem with her husband. He's a very respected black doctor, and she's working on behalf of, bettering the lives of other African-Americans in her community. Meanwhile, Claire is passing as white and living in Chicago with her wealthy white husband. They were childhood friends, and by chance, they're just reunited. And at first, Irene enjoys having Claire back in her life, but it doesn't take long for things to get very complicated with each woman finding things to envy in the other's life and to maybe even dislike about the other. So it's a lot about relationships. It's about race. It's about expectations and what is the easier path in life. And it's not as straightforward as, either character necessarily thinks at the beginning of the movie, like what is the easier path? Because we get a glimpse of what's actually hard and what's actually easy for both of them, not just one or the other character.
I also understand that you both liked West Side Story. Full disclosure, as a Puerto Rican person, I did not love it, but go ahead. Can you make the case for why you did?
I grew up with the old version of West Side Story, the one that came out in the early 1960s. And I remember even as a kid thinking, this is kind of offensive. Why do we have Natalie Wood, who is as white and Anglo as can be, playing the Puerto Rican title role in this? Maria, why are all of these people in brown face? Why does the fighting look more like ballet than like street gangs? Why is this not more cinematic? Why does the film so often feel like it's just a camera that's set on a tripod while people dance in front of it? And I feel that the new version of West Side Story fixes so many of those problems. It tries to have a cast that actually, is Latino to play the Puerto Rican actors. It tries to be cinematic in a way that, obviously you would expect of Steven Spielberg, who is directing this. The new screenplay by Tony Kushner adds a lot more intricacy and nuance to the story, which was otherwise a little bit lacking in subtlety, a little bit lacking in intricacies, not necessarily acknowledging the realities of poverty and racism and urban renewal. I'm saying that in quotes. And so I feel like this movie does a much better job with all of that. And I just found myself captivated by it. And the music, the way the sound is mixed, it's just beautiful. I did see this one in the theater and I felt fully immersed. I felt like this is what the movies were made for. But I would love to hear, Alana, your thoughts on why you didn't like it, because I am not Puerto Rican, and I'll just own that right here and now. I'm Asian American.
Well, I hear you on the tripod problem being solved. Visually, it's a beautiful movie. I mean, I love the opening, going over all the rubble in Lincoln Square. The dancing is great. The colors of the costumes, beautiful. But it still, for me, felt like a movie that was made from a white perspective. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but there's a detective character above Officer Krupke, who's in the original. And as he's sort of orienting us in the film, we hear him basically give like the white perspective. And to me, it felt like the whole movie stayed with that the whole way through. Like Tony gets a lot more depth with his character than Maria does. And it really just felt like it focused on the Jets more than the Sharks, And I guess it also, I couldn't shake the feeling that that it wasn't necessarily authentic. And I know that a lot of other Puerto Ricans who have seen the film also couldn't shake that feeling.
I will say that I understand everything that Alana is saying. You know, I'm half Mexican. I felt like they made a pretty good effort to make that cast, if not entirely Puerto Rican, at least try to, you know, cast Latinx performers in the roles. And I thought that was a good thing. And I actually really liked that opening monologue from the detective, from the Corey Stoll character, because I felt like he was throwing a glass of cold water on the whole Jets nativist philosophies. And the line I love in that, which comes from Tony Kushner clearly, is where he stares at them all and says, "Look at you guys, the last of the can't make it Caucasians." And I just thought that was such a great line and really like got to the heart of this whole problem that, you know, look, you know, it's gonna take more than being white to make it in the world from now on. And you guys gotta face up to it. And I thought that was in one line, I thought that really brought the whole movie up to the present day and gave it a much tougher, stronger feel. So I actually really liked that that opening monologue.
Yeah, I mean, the casting was certainly Latino, and they're all talented singers and dancers, but that shouldn't be the high bar. And the Spanish accents were kind of weak. But, you know, I just think there are other stories to tell and other people to tell them. So I don't think it's a depiction that did Puerto Ricans any favors. Not that we need any favors. I will say this, though. There's an urban planning critique baked into this new version, and the nerd in me did appreciate that. So anyway, Rafer, the epic historical drama The Last Duel had a stacked cast. I think I recall Matt Damon, Adam Driver, Ben Affleck all in it. I don't really know much else about it. Why did it make your list?
Yeah, I really am in the minority on this one. I feel like neither critics nor audiences really seem to warm to this movie, and it sort of surprised me. Quick synopsis, it's a true story based on the last sanctioned duel in medieval France. Matt Damon plays this soldier named de Carrouge. Adam Driver is his longtime friend, Jacques Legris, which is a great name for a villain. And then Jodie Comer plays the wife of de Carrouge, Marguerite. And one day the soldier comes home and his wife says that Jacques Legris has raped her. And Legris denies this, but the couple will not let the charge drop. And through sort of various twists and turns in the weird medieval legal system, it turns out that there's really only one way to settle this, and that is with a duel to the death. And there's a catch to this for the wife in particular. If the other guy wins, then she'll be burned alive for lying. So the, I was just about to say the stakes, sorry for the pun, the stakes are very high in this. And I thought it was just riveting. It's set up in kind of a Rashomon way where you hear the soldier's story first, you hear Legris's story second, and then you hear the wife's story third. And it's pretty clear that the wife's story is the one that is going to be the truest to life. And I thought that was a brilliant construction. The script was great. It's Affleck and Damon back together again after Good Will Hunting. They wrote the script, but they wrote it with Nicole Holofcener, who's a great filmmaker in her own right. Friends with Money. She did the screenplay for Can You Ever Forgive Me with Melissa McCarthy. I just thought it was a really intelligent, frightening, and horrifying version of a rape accusation. And I thought it was great the way that you could see how some things have changed and some things haven't, and you know what it means to be the accused, what it means to do the accusing, the way society treats you, the way people split down the middle and who believes you and who doesn't. And even though, you know, no one gets burned alive anymore for it, they kind of do figuratively in some ways still. The risks are still very great for women to bring these kinds of accusations. And there was something metaphorical about that that I thought was really powerful. But I will tell you, it did not do well at the box office. I know very few people who are not film critics who have seen it. And I know very few people who are even aware of it. It kind of came and went, but I loved it. It's up in my top five, my top three.
Rafer Guzman is a film critic for Newsday, and Kristen Meinzer is a culture critic and author of How to Be Fine. Thank you both.
Thanks for having us.